Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past to Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we go to the shoebox under the bed and investigate its contents and consider picture postcards and explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these precious cardboard rectangles. Each time, I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as little clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that today my guests are academic, writer, broadcaster, Tom Shakespeare, and classical music broadcaster, specifically part of Classic FM since 1996, Anne-Marie Minhall. Tom and Anne-Marie, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Now, as I mentioned, Anne-Marie Minhall can be heard every weekday on Classic FM by her 2.6 million listeners. We're hoping to add to that slightly with a handful of podcast listeners today. And you may not be surprised to hear that Anne-Marie has been voted one of the Radio Times' top 10 female radio voices in the UK. Anne-Marie joins us today bearing a TN12 postmark. What's that?
TN12 is Marden Cemetery in Tunbridge in Kent. And it's where four members of the Minhall family are buried. Wow. And when I visit that cemetery, I can't help thinking, well, I suppose this is where I will end up. And it's the most beautiful cemetery.
It's, well, that's a relief, because this could be quite grim.
Yes, it is. It's a very beautiful place. It's very peaceful. There's a lot of birdsong, and it's just, it is a lovely place. And Kent has a big part in my life for Minhall's, and I've still got lots of family there as well, not just in the cemetery. But
is that where the ancestral home is?
No, the Minhall name is a mystery, actually. Ah. No one really knows where it came from. And my uncle, my father's brother, is really doing all his fantastic research, looking through Minhall through the First World War and beyond that. But he was once told by an aunt, you should never look into the history of the Minhalls. But
fantastic.
We don't, which of course just spurs us on even more. So we don't know. We're kind of spread far and wide. But and in fact, through Classic FM, I've had a few Minhalls get in contact saying, I think we might be related. And we always are.
They weren't asking for money, were they?
Well, I did check.
Perhaps you could ask them for money.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? But yes, I suppose Kent and that part of England, it is beautiful. And yes. I'd like to be there, I think.
Very good. Now, Anne-Marie, do you still send postcards?
Oh, all the time.
When I
got your email, Tom, I was beyond excited. I was telling, I've got three or four really close friends, and we do postcards all the time.
Very good.
I've got a box of 100 penguin cookery postcards that bought me for Christmas, because I love to be in the kitchen and to cook. I've got two friends who split their time between St Monans in Fife and Glasgow. And just today I came home and there was one on the mat from one of the friends and the dog. They've just had a boys' weekend. And my friend Jenny, who travels or was travelling all over the world with Grey Eye Theatre Company, Jenny Seeley, she was also the co-artistic director for the opening ceremony for the Paralympics in 2012. Right. So, and she sends me and my stepmother postcards from everywhere. And I told all my friends about this, and they're just, they're all at the website. In fact, I think I told you as well, I bought your book for my stepmother.
Excellent, excellent. This is this. You can come back. You can come back.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to ask why Jenny Seeley never sends me a postcard. Because I clearly don't know her nearly as well as you do, but I do know her, and she's a wonderful woman.
She is, Tom. Do you know, I was thinking that, and I, when I knew I was going to be chatting to you today, I've dropped her an email to say, do you know Sir Tom? Because I thought, of course you must do. And I'm still waiting to hear back from her. She's all over the place at the moment. So when I see her, I should get her on posting you postcards, of course.
Well, the occasional postcard is always appreciated.
Very good. Well, I really didn't intend to start any kind of trouble with old friends, but anyway. it's perfectly possible you may have been taught by Tom Shakespeare, or you may have read his academic work. He's a social scientist and bioethicist with a particular focus on disability and big current ethical issues around prenatal genetic testing and end-of-life assisted suicide. And you may also have heard Tom on Radio 4 talking about all sorts of subjects. And Tom comes to us today with an NE10 postmark. Is that right?
That's correct. And that would be Bilkey in Gateshead. And you can hear from my voice, I'm not a Geordie, but I spent about 20 years living on the banks of the Tyne in the east side of Gateshead. And I love it. And my postcode indeed used to be NE10. And my friends still live there. My daughter's mother lives there. And it's you can see the river up and down. And it's a beautiful place. You can also see old shipyards and new oil rig yards, which in turn presumably will themselves pass. So it's the history all the way back. And just down the road is Jarrow Monastery, which of course where Venerable Bede was. So you know, 1,000 years of history are encapsulated there.
Encapsulated in one postcode. Now, Tom, when did you last send a postcard?
I collect more postcards than I send. I have hundreds of postcards in boxes. And every now and then I do send one. But I regret or perhaps delight in the fact that I'm more often sending either a letter or a email, sadly, these days. When I got your message, I checked that my fountain pen was still working. And I do think there's something about writing, which is very, very helpful. And particularly, you know, we don't have necessarily time to write a long letter like we used to. But a postcard, you know, it can bring joy and has, and indeed has to me. So I'm still got to, I think I will die with a whole couple of boxes of shoe boxes full of postcards. But I'm trying to shift as many as I can.
Very good. Well, I think, I mean, one of the reasons postcards took off so quickly in the turn of the 20th century, really, was because they were so much easier to write than a proper letter. And they were democratising in that sense.
And do they keep longer? I mean, in the sense that you've obviously seen many, many from the past. As documents, do they have longevity? Or is it that a sort of letter in an envelope is more likely to be preserved?
Well, no, I think postcards are more likely to be preserved, partly because from the very beginning, from the very first picture postcards, they were collected. People wanted to hold on to them because they're pretty or interesting, as well as being a form of communication. So I think people did hold on to them. And even now, you want to hold on to them. You know, you can put it on your mantelpiece in the way if someone wrote you a letter, you wouldn't put it on your mantelpiece.
No, that's true. And you put them in a clip frame and all the rest of it. And I think that's why I hold on to so many, why I have the boxes and I can't be prized away from them. And sometimes, you know, they're your favourite. And I particularly get works of art. And also where I travel, I pick them up. And, you know, you've bought them for a purpose. They're about a visit or something you want to celebrate. And I don't want to get rid of them.
Cheap souvenir, pocket art gallery. It's all there, really.
Anyway, I'm not the Postcard Liberation Front, but I do enjoy them. Now, before we see and hear the cards that Tom and Anne-Marie have brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. So this is like a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in my book. So it's an old card. I looked at the message on the back. So it's not a card that I was sent or a card that I send. It's a card that's long since lost its sender and recipient. It's an orphan in the storm. So the first card here is... and. I should just tell the listeners at home, because we're not all in the studio together, although the sound probably would make you think we were, we're actually talking on the internet. So we've all got a dope sheet from which we can all see the different cards. So the first card I've got is this card from the Isle of Man, and it's got a mess. The whole front is a message, and the message is, I've forgotten all about work on the Isle of Man. There was a whole series of these. And the work is in huge letters, and within the letters are views of the Isle of Man. So it's a simple idea, but... very striking. And you can get these from all sorts of different resorts. This one was published by Bamforth, and it's from 1984. And it's sent to Shetland in Scotland. And it's sent from someone called David. And it says, Dear Ma and Dar, having a great time. Weather is good, but it was raining this morning. Going to see Motorhead tonight. And I suppose it just kind of... That last bit of the message rather crept up on me. I didn't expect that to be the payoff for this rather traditional card from the Isle of Man. But, so, you know, I hope David had a good time watching Motorhead in 1984. I suppose they would have been pretty huge in 1984.
It's not the sort of card that you would have posted to your boss, is it?
No. Well, I'll give you another quick one of my cards. This is a card of Tower Bridge. So... it's a gloriously sunny day on this Cardorama card from 1978. And I was trying to work out where they took the picture from, but because you seem to be on the balcony of a hotel with sort of concrete planters looking out across the Tower of London and Tower Bridge and a bit of the river there. Anyway, it's... it was sent to Staplehurst in Kent, so that's your part of the world there, Anne-Marie.
It is.
And it's sent by someone called Jackie B, since you ask. And I just thought it sort of summed up that feeling of a day out that you might have had as a kid or something. It said, today we're at the Tower of London and Tower Bridge. Tower Bridge is lovely and Tower of London is fantastic. And I saw the lovely crown jewels. She likes the word lovely a lot. It was a lovely day to go, but a bit crowded. I had a 4.5-inch lolly, and Mum bought me and Mandy a jumping bean each. So, I thought it was very cute the way she measured the lolly. I don't know what it would have been. I don't know, what would you have had 4.5 inches? Maybe one of those sort of Zoom ones.
Yeah, or a fab or something.
Fab, maybe, yeah.
Could
and
be.
I don't know...
I like this postcard because it's got... obviously, it doesn't have a gherkin and it doesn't have all of those other probably skyscrapers that you would now see in that scene.
Yeah.
So it's sort of unspoilt in some way.
Yeah, and very green. I was taken about how fecund it looks around there. It may just be the angle, but I hadn't thought about the buildings, Tom. That's a really good point. Yeah, it's just Tower Bridge, isn't it? And lots of greenery and the Tower of London.
And a fake sky, I think. I'm sure it was never that blue. But it was a sunny day because there's hard shadows on the parapet of the terrace or the balcony. So, but also, I noted this line about the jumping bean. Do either of you remember getting jumping beans?
Yes, as soon as you said that, I remembered this annoying Mexican... is it Mexican jumping bean? And it was in a little Perspex box, and did you heat it up? Or I can't remember.
Did it really work? I never knew if it was a con or not.
No.
Because there were things that had ball bearings in that called themselves jumping beans. Do you remember those? They were like a little... like a pill.
Okay, I don't remember that.
And they would sort of roll around and be like a... But there was always this notion there might be a real jumping bean that really jumped, and I just don't think it exists, does it?
I never saw it.
Neither did I, no.
Well,
lies.
Anyway, Jackie B got one. And she seemed very pleased. But she didn't measure it the way she measured her ice lolly, so...
It's quite an interesting thing, because the Tower of London, obviously, I mean, many of us read the novels of the Tudor period and how you went off there to be executed and so forth. And then it was a zoo. And it was a zoo for many, many years. And all through the Georgian period, you went along and you saw an elephant or a lion or a leopard at the Tower of London. And, of course, now it's just a tourist attraction and you might buy Mexican dancing beans, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Well, very good. Look, I should remind everyone at home listening that all these images, so the blue sky and the lack of a gherkin and the oversized word work, are all going to be on the podcast, on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that we're not making it up. Now, Anne-Marie and Tom have been kind enough to dig out for this long-distance podcast some postcards of their own. Let's start with you, Anne-Marie. What's the first card you've got for us?
This is a lovely piece of artwork, and it's one of those sort of long rectangular postcards where you can fit more on if you want to write it. And
it's an unusual size, isn't it? Definitely. It's not the normal format. It's longer and thinner. And is it very large, or have I just...
No, it's probably the size of like an A4 envelope, if you see what I mean.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, like the sort of thing that you get your gas bill in.
What a lovely way to put it.
And I love it. So it's three kites, and in the top right, I love the colours of it for a start, but it's all about Adnams, beer from the coast. And Adnams is a Suffolk-based brewery. And Suffolk, again, like Kent, has played a big part in my years. Oh. And the postcard was written by my stepmother, which I'll mention her in just a moment. Adnams Beer from the Coast, and it just brought back fantastic memories of spending mainly New Year's holidays in Thorpe Ness and Aldborough and South Wold and Warbleswick. During my teenage years, my stepsister's teenage years, and my stepbrother's teenage years, with my father, my stepmother, and then friends would descend from York. And every year we'd hire this wonderful little cottage in Thorpe Ness, which had no central heating.
Sounds wonderful.
And you got kind of three moping teenagers now again. Something like three dogs involved. My father had specific tasks, so he would make breakfast for everyone. He'd take the dogs out in the morning for a walk. He'd collect driftwood for the fire. Once breakfast was done, the pots and everything, that was him done. And he said, my tasks are done. And then we would all go out, we do our own thing, but we always got together in the evening for a meal, or we go out for a little trip in the cars and what have you. And it was wonderful. And I was looking through the postcards, which was a joy in itself, because like Tom, I've got quite a few. I picked this one because it brought back so many happy memories of Suffolk is the most beautiful county anyway, as I'm sure you both know. But it was New Year's Eve in the Cross Keys in Aldborough. Then we all be back, and there'd be a game of Scrabble, some Twister. There was no telly. It was a joy. There was radio, which was unbridled joy to have a radio there, obviously. And even one little story came to mind of my stepsister, her boyfriend, who wasn't terribly popular with the elder members of the family, was coming down for a couple of nights.
We'll change his name.
Yeah, of course. So he arrives, and my father and Jerry, the head of the other family, with us, grumbling, blah, blah, blah. And the women were a bit kind of, well, you know, just Ron, you know. But Jane was all, you know, my stepsister was all kind of, oh, he's coming, you know, can't wait. So he turns up with two bottles of very expensive malt whiskey, at which point the men's attitudes changed. Come in and sit down. Anne-Marie, you move. Let him have a seat. And it was all of that. So lovely memories. But as I say, you know, we were a family that had got together quite late for, you know, in teenagers. I'd lived with my father on just me and him for many, many years. Then suddenly it was all of us together. And we got on with it. But there were moments. And the card, this postcard was written by Jill, who was my stepmum. who's got beautiful writing. And I did wonder about sharing this, but I think I'm going to. Jill this year she's been diagnosed with dementia, and this is one of the last cards I had from her, where her writing looks like her writing, and she's talking about being in Suffolk and the weather's beautiful, and laughing a lot with a friend, and it's just wonderful. And I think it's memories like that, and just like not all of us, but many of us, when we write a postcard, she starts off all quite big with this beautiful writing at the top, and then it gets lit like a spider with, you know, bowel problems towards the end. And then there's a different pen used, a different colour. When are you and Martin coming? Kisses for Jenny. And she's trying to fit everything on. And it's beautiful. It was just a joy. And I thought, yeah, that was one of my first choices. Brought back so many happy memories.
Very nice. And it's a very evocative image. It's very graphic. It has a kind of 30s look, I think, the way they've put it together. And the kites, something about kites in the air and freedom is very... It's a very evocative image.
It's a lovely image,
yeah.
And as you say, absolutely the 30s. And the colours of it, it's the illustration, it says on the card, is by someone called Chris Wormwell.
Okay.
So thank
he's
you,
good.
Chris, for that.
He or she.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
It looks like maybe a screen print or a lino cut? I mean, it's very stylish.
Yeah, I'd love to know. I don't know. Jill, my stepmother, definitely has always had an eye for a good photograph and a good piece of art and interior designs and everything. And that's obviously caught her eye for some reasons. But I'd love to know where it came from.
And is it a promotional card, really, from Adlams? Is that?
I think so, yeah. She's picked it up somewhere. Yeah.
They're the best free postcards.
Free postcards. And there's no blurb on the back at all about, you know, come and drink a pint of Adnams. It's just at the bottom, it's just their website address and Adnams. And I just thought, yeah, classy, I thought.
Very nice, very nice. What a lovely thing as well. And you know, there is something encapsulated on the back of that card that catches a moment and catches an emotion for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you for that. Now, Tom, what's the first card on your doormat?
Okay, so unfortunately this isn't written on, but it's not written on because I bought it, and it's from the Viking Ship Museum in Oslo, and it's the Osberg ship.
This is a dramatic image.
It is very striking, and when you're there, I mean, it was very, very moving. I studied Anglo-Saxon, Northern Celtic as a student. It was my first degree, and, you know, these Viking ships are so exciting. And there's three of them, in fact, at that museum. And I remember going there and visiting it. And I remember, I think, when I bought that postcard, because I was there for... I'm a disability researcher, as you said, and I was there for the Nordic Network of Disability Research conference. And we had a reception at the Viking Ship Museum.
I think that's where
I bought this postcard. I was there and I got a phone call from Newcastle that my friend Julia Darling had died, and she'd had cancer for, actually many years. And I had visited her the previous week in hospital, and she'd obviously been dying. And I remember, you know, obviously floods of tears and great distress. And so although I love this postcard because of the Viking ship, it also brings her back. And that whole era in Newcastle when we were very close friends. And, it's never going to leave me, that thought. And so that's why I've kept the card. On a lighter note, as I said, you know, I spent 20 years in Newcastle. And I remember I had I've got dear friends in Iceland. And I had a friend from Iceland visit. And I took her up and down the coast in Newcastle, and I took her to Lindisfarne and all of these other Northumbrian coasts. And every time we stopped and pulled over and got out the car and had a look at the lovely East Coast and the ruins there, I said to Randveig, I said, well, your ancestors raped and pillaged here. And then we would move a bit further down the coast and, you know, there'd be a ruin. And I'd say, well, your ancestors were to blame in the 10th century, whatever it might be. And by the end of the day, I mean, we had seen some beautiful, beautiful sights, but ships like this one had clearly come over the eastern horizon and laid waste to many of these places.
It may look beautiful.
It wasn't her fault, but, you know...
I'm glad you don't bear a grudge.
I don't bear a grudge, no. But it was my idea of a joke. But maybe I pushed it a bit too far.
Oh, that's the danger with every joke.
It is.
Tom, can I ask how many, because the angle of that, I mean, it is an extraordinarily stunning image. How many people would have been in there?
I'm not sure. I think maybe 40. But it depends. Both these ships may have been coastal ships. You can see there's a mast. And there, you can see that there are oar holes along, and they would have slung, obviously, shields, and they would have rowed. I have got where I'm sitting a new and wonderful book called Children of Ash and Elm, which is a new history of the Vikings. And when I've read it, I will email you and tell you how many people there would have been in a ship like this, because I don't currently know. But what I do know is that, you know, extraordinarily, people from Norway particularly, but Denmark and Sweden as well, voyaged in ships not very different from this one, not just to Britain, where they raped and pillaged, but, you know, we've mentioned the Isle of Man. That was a Norse settlement. We mentioned Shetland. That was a Norse settlement.
Yes.
And indeed to Ranveig's homeland, Iceland, and further afield to America, as well as to Kiev and Constantinople. I mean, quite extraordinary seafarers. You know, in Newcastle today, when you say you're going home, you say I'm Ganyem. And Ganyem is basically Norwegian. And it's because the Vikings left their mark on, indeed, where you are talking about in Suffolk, the Vikings left their mark on the whole of the east coast of the UK. And indeed, Dublin and the Lake District and further afield.
Goodness.
They come here.
Well, yeah. In Iceland, they've done genetic analysis better than anywhere else. And what they found was that the Vikings tended to come, they'd stopped in either Ireland or Britain. They got a lady, and I presume she didn't volunteer to go on the boat. They grabbed a lady, and then they took her off to Iceland. And so the genome of Iceland is largely Norwegian male line, and British Isles, female line.
Goodness.
I'm afraid that there are some very bad histories there of male-based violence.
Yes, but there's a sort of unpacking with these genomes that didn't used to be possible. It was just hearsay.
That's right. I mean, in Iceland, you have a book of the Icelanders. That's what it's called. And so Iceland is very, very good at genealogy. But when they had Decode and they all volunteered their genome, they suddenly realised that, you know, they were related to Fred over the hill. And they'd never realised this. When were they related? In the 14th century. It's not a big place. What's interesting about Iceland, you know, when I first went there, there were less than 300,000 people there. And now there's about 330,000, I think. They've had a lot of immigration, which is wonderful, from Poland, from Philippines, from refugees of all sorts. So they've become much more diversified, which has brought with it its tensions, but like with everywhere. But, it's a wonderful place. And it's ships like this one from Norway that would have settled it. The first parliament in the universe, in the British, in the world in 930 at Thingvellir. And, they've been innovating ever since.
And this, when did they discover this boat? You know, I don't want to put you on the spot.
Again, I'm afraid I'm going to let you down. It would have been in the early 20th century, I think. And it was a ship burial, like it was at Sutton Hoo.
Of course, which a lot of us are more familiar with recently because of that film.
Exactly, The Dig. It would have been like that. And they'd have dug it up, and there was a very well endowed gentleman or lady buried in the middle of it.
And it's kind of amazing because if you leave your garden gate untreated, it doesn't last very long in the wind and the rain. And yet, from whatever it is, 1,100 years ago, 1,200 years ago, this is preserved.
Yes. It is. I mean, it has to be in exactly the right, I don't know, silt or whatever it is,
right.
To be preserved. But just one more thing. I mean, not far, perhaps, from where you're talking about in Suffolk, in Essex, there's this wonderful old English poem called The Battle of Maldon. The Vikings had landed, and they were on basically at the end of a piece of land, and they could only come sort of two at a time. So they were not going to, you know, win. And the English said, no, come over, come straight over. Yeah, and it's like, you know, cricket means that you fight us on the battleground. And of course, the Vikings say, oh, thanks a bunch, and kill them all. It's a lesson that English politeness doesn't really get you very far.
Very good. I don't know how to respond to that. I don't know if there's too much or too little politeness around, so I don't know. Very good, very good. Well, I'll do one more quick card of mine. This is a card of Blackpool, and, you know, what could be more typical than a card from Blackpool? And this is a card, it's what we call a multi-view, you know, three views. It's on a rather sort of dull grey. I suppose it may have been violet once, but it's a bit grey now, with an artist-drawn rose. And the rose comes with some lucky heather, always a good thing to add. And it says, best wishes from Blackpool. And three images. The images are of the promenade, of Stanley Park, and what they call Rough Sea, which is a sort of phrase that has a great heritage in the postcard world. And it's and you can see Blackpool Tower and a very blue sky. And the message was sent in 1963, a long time ago. And it was sent to Kettering. And it was sent by someone called, I think, Emily. The handwriting's a little bit hard to read. And she says, having a lovely time. The weather is just right. Boy, is it hot. And then she says, feel like a red Indian. Slightly regrettable phrase. I don't know quite what she means. I suppose she means someone who's used to hot weather. But, I mean, I don't know. We wouldn't express it that way now. And she says, we have got tickets to see Lonnie Donegan's show on Friday. Hope Mr. Smith is feeling better. And I was just intrigued that you sort of forget that the shows on at the seaside in those days were the absolute top acts of their time. So, you know, Lonnie Donegan was a big name. And he was in a show, I checked it out, he was in a show called Putting on the Donegan. Slightly weird name for a show. Featuring Des O'Connor, I might add. But if she'd gone along to the North Pier Pavilion, she could have seen Morecambe and Wise and Matt Munro in another show. Or at the ABC down the road, as cinema converted, she could have seen Cliff Richard. So there were a lot of good acts in Blackpool in 1963 that young Emily could have gone to see.
No Motorhead, though.
Well, precisely. Precisely. Listeners, she would have to wait another 21 years.
Yes, for that. That's an extraordinary lineup, though. And you kind of forget about, you know, Blackpool sometimes can be shown in sometimes an uncomplimentary light. But for that particular era, I mean, I know really from what I've read, you know, Morecambe and Wise, it was where you made your name and you tested your act, wasn't it? And then television took over. But yeah, that's an amazing. I mean, you could have gone a whole week seeing four, five great shows, probably.
Which of course is a good idea in Blackpool because the weather's not guaranteed. You're not in Spain. You know, you want a holiday, but the British weather doesn't always give you that sunbathing thing. So go to look at the amusements during the day, go to the show at night, and at least you'll have had something. Something will have happened.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Cliff Richard show started in August, the month before the Beatles had done five nights there.
Oh, gosh.
So it's funny. You know, I think it was like a sort of real showbiz mecca. And I suppose the cliche is that you'd have second-rate acts, but these were top acts.
Yeah.
We missed our calling. I've been to Blackpool. Obviously, many, many of your listeners have. But I've been to it was either a student union or a trade union conference in Blackpool. And so I suspect that the majority of visitors have been to a party political conference or a trades union conference or something like that. And that's what places like Blackpool and Brighton and these seaside resorts have become, really, haven't they? Because the entertainment prior to the lockdown was in Spain or Greece or Portugal. The idea of going for your holidays to UK has dwindled.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if Blackpool's had a bit of a revival this year. I hope so. I hope so. I always enjoy going there.
I enjoyed my visit. I'm just racking my brains as to which union conference it was. But, yeah, we were probably in some terrible meeting hall.
The thing that struck me about Blackpool, I remember thinking, is how cheap it was. And that is not not a criticism. It was inexpensive. You could buy straightforward stuff, fish and chips, burger and chips, a beer, whatever, really inexpensively. I just thought, I like this. This is a good thing.
Do you think that red rose is the Lancastrian red rose? Is that why it's red, do you think?
Yeah, I was wondering
I'm
that.
I'm sure you're right. I just saw it as an ornament, but I'm sure you're right. I'd have to go further into the Valentine's archive and see what they did
if
for...
If Scarborough had a white rose or...
Precisely.
Or Cleethorpes or whatever.
It's brilliant. You've given me a mission and a quest, which is what I love, so... I'll get back to you in due course. I'll update the blog when I find out.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are Tom Shakespeare and Anne-Marie Minhall. Here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And the postcard, which is a lovely picture of a sort of rather graphic image of a sunset, helpfully with the word sunset across the bottom. and it's from Susan Terry of Somerset, Wincanton in Somerset. And Susan says, the answer is red cabbage. Oh, I'm sorry, Susan. That's the wrong answer. Now, Anne-Marie, what's the second card you've got for us?
Ah, well, now then, I have a passion for cricket.
Ah.
Thanks to... my father's getting a lot of mentions today, which would please him enormously, where he's still with us. My father, Michael, the summers were all about playing... cricket, local village cricket, round and about in Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire, Lincolnshire, Leicestershire. And then the winters would be all about football, which he played as well. And he was an excellent all-rounder. I've still got a picture of him when he was playing in a charity match at Trent Bridge, which is God's own favourite ground. So the love for cricket just grew through the years. My father then took me to a test match to see England v West Indies. And this was when it was the days of bomb scares. So at one point throughout the play, we all had to go into the middle of the pitch, which in hindsight probably wasn't a very good idea. Anyway, it was all fine.
What an image.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't really know what was going on. I was just holding my father's hand, and I think my father just being, oh, let's get back to the cricket and everything. And anyway, all was well and fine. But the main one I remember was the centenary of the Ashes at Trent Bridge, 1977. I mean, I'd never known an atmosphere like it. And even now, you know, with Let's Hope the Ashes happening later this year, we'll see what occurs. But I love the rivalry. I love the passion from both sets of players, from both sides of the supporters. So what happens there? And may I just share, I am going to, because my father would have been pleased. I don't like the word proud very much, but my father would have been pleased. After 19 years of being on the waiting list for the MCC, I finally got full membership in January this year.
Congratulations. And I think
thank you. Right. And I think my father would have been pleased because one, you know, the MCC, let's think back a few years, well, more than a few years, a couple of decades before women were allowed to join the MCC. And I've been lucky and I've been patient, I think, and I've loved my cricket through the years and I love being at Lord's. I love watching the cricket, and to be back this summer after 2 years away, 18 months away, was wonderful. Hence, a lot of my friends and my family seek out cards with cricket on them.
Because they know.
Because they know. And I've got lots of them. Some are from olden times. Some are more modern. My friend took a picture of this fantastic cricket team in Fife based at Ely, and they play cricket on the beach during the summer.
Goodness.
And yeah, and I think
I could approve of that, I think.
Well, yeah, and I think if a four is counts depending what the tide's doing, if it goes into the sea. I mean, it's right by a pub. I mean, it's fantastic. This particular card I picked out because it's from two friends who are, that they spend a lot of time finding cricket cards for me. And this one, I love the colours on it. And I did a bit of research to find, I'd never heard of Alf Gover.
We should describe it for the listener.
Yeah, it's a beautiful green background, and there's a drawing of presumably that is Alf, and it's the cover to his book, which is called How to Play Cricket by Alf Gover, Surrey and England 11, illustrated by Leonard Haggerty. Centre stage is a massive cricket ball.
It's enormous, isn't it?
It's enormous. And we see a picture of Alf both with bat and ball, but mainly he was a bowler, and Alf had two long careers in cricket. The first as a wholehearted fast bowler for Surrey, and briefly for England, he played four tests. And I couldn't believe the timing, because today is the first day of the test between England and India. We're 1-1 at the moment and at the Oval. And he played when England weren't overstocked with fast bowlers, and he only won four test caps, three of them in his golden years, 1936-37, we're talking here. Wow. And the final call came after the war. He was 38 and he opened the bowling against India at his beloved Oval. And I thought, there's some symmetry there. The other part of his career, he opened a cricket school, which sadly closed. He was known as the Mr. Chips of cricket teachers. Isn't that wonderful? And he owned this. It was a legendary indoor cricket school in Wandsworth, South London. There was tuition. Yeah. But some of the mightiest names in cricket walked through his doors. People like Viv Richards, Ken Barrington, Brian Lara. Yeah, and it was a joy again. It was, and at one point he was the oldest surviving Test cricketer in the world, and he lived to the grand old age of 93 till 2001. And I thought it was just a joy researching about this man's life.
And you didn't know about him until the card came through your letterbox, is that right?
No, absolutely
wonderful.
Not. No.
It was, yeah, well, yes, it's prompted something for you, isn't it?
And I do love this card very much, and it's obviously he played for Surrey in England, and I was going to apologise to you in case there was the noise of cheering on my microphone, because I am in Kilner House. Kilner was a 1930s cricketer, and the Oval is literally, I could throw a stone and hit it, and England have just bowled India out for 191. It's so close. And clearly he knew all of these areas. And Kilner, as I say, was a cricketer. All of the blocks, Kennington housing blocks around the Oval, are named after famous cricketers, and it's a wonderful place to be. But if I had a membership, it would be of the Oval, not of the MCC. My father was a member of the MCC, so congratulations that you're there, Anne-Marie.
Thank you. And I'll be round about 10 to 11 tomorrow, Tom. Okay.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I wish you could stand on our roof and see, but the roof has been pulled off.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, well, it's a magnificent summer of cricket so far, and I think fans are just, supporters are just so delighted to be, like we all are, for everything, for arts, you know, for theatre, for galleries, but to be at sporting events as well. So yes, it's a big part of life, and I think it just always makes me, I feel close to my father when I'm at a cricket match or when I receive, yeah, so it's lovely.
And this book, this postcard is a reproduction of a book cover, of a Puffin book, by the looks of it.
For 2 and 6.
Have you looked out? Have you put your hand in your pocket for 2 and 6 and tried to find it somewhere?
I have found it. I have actually found it on the.
Of course you have.
Of course, you find everything on the internet. I haven't put my hand in my pocket yet, only because work kind of took over the last couple of days. But I'm going to get it just because and then maybe post it. No, it would be rude to say post it to Coley, wouldn't it? I wouldn't. And actually,
let's wait and see who wins the test.
Oh, I never jinx a match, Tom. I never jinx it. And I think the other thing about getting the cricket postcards is that being an England enthusiast through the years, my word, I've lived with the disappointments and the victories, and when you have a day like today or like we did, you know, last week, you hang on to this and think, that feels good.
It's the long game.
It is.
In every sense. Yeah. But you'll have to get the book because the illustrations are going to be really good, you just know.
Yeah, you're right, because the colours are stunning as well. It's something about colour, obviously, that's called me to both those cards, I think.
Yes, well, I think that's part of what postcards are, you know. Ever since they started putting colour on them, I think it's one of the things that catches the eye, definitely. Excellent. Well, thank you for bowling that one to us. It's very, very interesting, and I can see that it resonates so powerfully for you, which is lovely. Tom, let's look at the final card we've got. Now, this again is an arresting image.
So this
what's this one?
Right. So it's called Untitled Brackets Wheelchair, and it's an artwork by the British Lebanese artist Mona Hatoum, and it's all made in stainless steel, fabricated in stainless steel, and it's got the wheelchair. It's got very small wheels, and so it's the sort of wheelchair that you'd have to have somebody pushing. You couldn't possibly propel a wheelchair like this yourself. And then you look very close. Well, not even very closely. Suddenly, you realise that the handles, which a carer would have to push, are carving knives. I mean, they're literally sharpest, pointiest, cuttiest knives, and it almost makes you wince. The idea of putting your hands on those and pushing a person would be terribly wounding. And I think that I saw this. It was an exhibition of Mona Hatoum's work, and it so powerfully encapsulated the possible attention and the concealed aggression within a caring relationship. You know, that maybe the carer is really angry with their role looking after the person, whether they're a child or an adult, in the chair. Or maybe the disabled person, is really frustrated with having the dependency thrust upon them. And they're pointing daggers back at the person who is either a professional or a care worker. And so I felt that it was so richly resonant. And as soon as I saw it, I hope that you will look at the website and have a look at this image. It really encapsulated something about disability and caring. And I'm a social scientist, and as you said, I study disability. And immediately I thought, this is really powerful. And so I've written various books, but my magnum opus was in 2006, and it was called Disability Rights and Wrongs. And this image is on the cover. And mainly academic books have really dull covers. But all my books have got artwork on the covers. And artwork is a major reason I buy postcards. And I think I'll have bought about 5 or 10 of these. Mm. And I'll have sent them to various people because I want them to look at them. But it's forever encapsulated on the on the cover of my book. So it's a conversation piece, really. And unfortunately, it's not very bright colours, but it's a pretty deep thought attached to it. And I did a talk about Mona Hatoum's work during lockdown, in fact. I was put in touch with the woman who runs her studio in East London. So I'm determined, when it's possible, to go and visit and, you know, quite just possibly meet the artist herself, who's in her 60s, I believe, and has done some really powerful political work over the years.
So when you saw this as an exhibition...
Yeah, my book came out in 2006, so I probably saw this as an exhibition, and I should have found out. This artwork was made in 1998, I think it says on the back.
I think it's 1998.
And it was taped, it was in the Tate Gallery, I presume it was in Tate Modern. Sometimes you go in and you see an exhibition and you stop dead. And you know, I've made artworks myself, and often they're playing on an actual artwork. And in this case, I've never made this, obviously, or anything remotely similar to it, but I have always thought about it and used it as the basis of discussion.
It is complicated, isn't it, what's going on there? Because it's not... There's no obvious statement coming out of it. It's not a simple observation on anything.
And that's what I like, because, you know, you can do ethics, bioethics, which I sometimes do, and you can construct philosophical arguments, and you can provide evidence, which is what I do more of the time. You can do research and you can find out what the situation is. But many of our conundrums in life are not resolvable. You know, there isn't an argument which proves one way or the other, and there isn't even data, there isn't even evidence which proves one way or the other. So you're left with this tension, this complexity, and it's in that complexity that we live our lives. And so I think art is a tool for thinking in that sense, and many, not all artworks, but many artworks make us think, and they don't give us answers, and that's exactly what this image does.
Yeah, I love it's provocative in the best sense. I think it's pushing you towards lots of things. And none of them comfortable, actually.
None of them comfortable. And I can't say, if you told me what your view, you'll all have a different attitude, or you'll take something different from it. And I can't say that I'm right and you're wrong. You know, there is no right answer. It's just a way of making you think, and it does that so well.
And it sits there unresolved.
I'm afraid that's life.
Yeah. Damn, I thought you had the answers.
You know what? I went into academia thinking I would find out the answers, you know, as a philosopher or as a social scientist. And the more you look, the more you realise there isn't one answer. There are many answers, and they're probably mostly wrong.
No, I think there's wisdom in that. There really is. Well, look, thank you. Thank you both for sharing these postcards with me and with each other and with the listeners. There's a cliched line that I always say, which is, I never know where the postcards will send us. But it's true. It's true. I don't. And actually, they do send us to some interesting and personal and touching places. And you know, if we're lucky, maybe profound. So, yes, thank you both for sharing them. Another reminder for those of you at home, it would be really good if you could look at the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, because then you can see what we're talking about. I mean, my guests have described things beautifully and eloquently, but you get to see them as well. Now, before I let you both go, I would normally pass across the desk in the studio to you one final postcard, but we'll do it virtually. So it's customary for us to end the programme with one of these. So the last card on your sheets is a card of a sort of rural scene. I don't know if you can you see that, Tom and Anne-Marie?
The one says, God bless you always. That's
quite explicit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So perhaps you could describe it to me.
It's a cornfield, I think. There's a windmill. There's a lady in the foreground with three large sort of dogs. It's a sort of 1920s or 30s image, I think. There's one of these great skies. There's a tree, a willow tree overshadowing it. And as I say, it says, God bless you always. And there seems to be, is it a pin that's been put into it to stick it on a wall?
There's
a
sort of... What is that?
A cylindrical... Either it's a spaceship coming to for the great... whatever it was called. Where in the end times. The rapture, that's what it is. Or else it's little green men. I'm not sure. Or else it's a drawing pin.
It may be the rapture. Well, the white dot in the middle is a hole, because this is a record. This is a record postcard that is a record.
So what?
It's pressed into the sort of shiny side of the postcard.
Wow. The grooves. You can just see the grooves. Yeah?
Can you see them now? They make sense?
Yes. I hadn't read those at all.
So this, it's almost like a sort of constructivist image as she stands against the breeze. Anyway, it's a record. And because young Tom at Wardour Studios is so clever, he has recorded this on his gramophone and made a digital file of it. And if we keep listening very carefully, we should now be able to hear what this postcard sounds like.
That's amazing. Is it British or American?
This is British.
Do we know who the voice is?
I don't think we know who it is. It's produced by a company called Melody Cards from NW1. I think it's from the 60s.
And is it square? So you're playing something...
It's rectangular, like a postcard, a large postcard, but the record bit is a round circle stamped onto it.
Wow, goodness me.
That's amazing.
I don't think the quality is that bad.
No, I think your man and Tom has done brilliantly.
Oh, well, he's got... But I think sometimes he has to kind of make sure they're not too curly on the turntable, that's all. Because, you know, after 40, 50 years, these things are a bit curly. But.
And is that what the song is called, God Bless You Always? Or
no.
Is it something different? Okay.
No, just as the message often bears very little relation to the picture, I think the music... The picture on this bears little relation to the music. I think God Bless You Always is just a message to send. You could send them in an envelope, but you didn't have to. I mean, you could send them letter post.
It's fantastic. I love it.
It is.
I've never had one of these. I've never seen one of these. It must be rare, but it's extraordinary.
Well, I there are one or two in my archive.
I have this image of you, Tom, at Postcard Towers, you know, and the long winter evenings you play these to yourself and think, the golden days of Postcard.
You've been spying on me, Tom. You've been spying on me.
And also, it's an interesting... When you sent these through, Tom, I was looking at it and I'm thinking, what an interesting choice of subject matter. Do you know what I mean?
It's
a random woman with three random Afghan hounds, if that's what they're... A random willow
Borzois,
tree.
I think. Are they Borzois?
Are they? And a windmill. Yes. And she's suddenly stopped and going and just decided, well...
She spotted something over to the right.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, what's that over there?
Get off my land!
Oh, God, it's Motorhead.
Yes, exactly. Well, as the Borzois continue to rotate... At exactly 45 RPM. That's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their and our pasts, Anne-Marie Minhall and Tom Shakespeare. Thank you both, and thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at PastPostcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.